What does it mean to be a leader in cancer care? At Davis Hospital Cancer Center, we know. It means a team of experts providing exceptional care using advanced technology and treatment plans designed specifically for each of our patients. And our nurse patient navigators are here to make your experience convenient and comfortable. To find out how our expert team could help you, contact us at davishospital.org. The Cancer Center at Davis Hospital and Medical Center, a Steward family hospital in partnership with physician owners.
Start the new year right during the Xfinity Hello 2021 sales event. For a limited time, get Xfinity Internet and mobile together for only $35 a month for 12 months with a one-year agreement, and mobile with our 1 gig wireless data option. Plus, get $250 back. This sale ends soon, so visit Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit an Xfinity store today. Internet offer requires paperless billing and autopay. Ends 1/11/21. Restrictions apply. New performance starter plus internet customers only. Equipment taxes, regulatory recovery, and other fees extra and subject to change. After term, regular rates apply.
Wow, do I have a good show for you today on the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture podcast. Today, we're going to talk to Chad Kalick. He is an award-winning filmmaker and researcher of the paranormal. If that name sounds familiar, it's because he's been featured in several documentaries and television shows like American Ghost Hunter and Paranormal State. He is currently executive producing and starring in Eli Roth's Ghosted Paranormal Show. Eli Roth, that's the director that created the Hostel series. But today, we're going to focus in on his nationwide tour and his latest work. An entity that was verified and documented on his film, Sir No Face. Now, Chad's going touring nationwide, starting August through September 2017 in 28 different cities. You're going to be able to catch this groundbreaking film in a city near you. This guy's great. We got into many different themes and theories and discussions that all relate to a lot of the topics we've been talking about on IlluminatiWatcher.com for several years. There's going to be some brief discussion into Chad's history, how he got into ghost hunting and the paranormal, as well as we get a little personal with his religious beliefs. Note that he was raised as an atheist, and you'll never believe where he is now in his religious beliefs. We also go into connections between ghosts and aliens, as well as reviewing this undeniable evidence that he's presenting on his Sir No Face tour. Chad's been a featured guest on many great shows like Jimmy Church's Fade to Black. He's going to be on Coast to Coast AM. So it's a huge honor to have him on our show. You're really going to enjoy this. Also want to do quick shout out, big ups to at Gabdulla Butcher for the nasty beats. That's the production that I use on a lot of my YouTube videos. He sent me some more new ones, much appreciated. Also, if you are listening to this podcast and you like what I'm doing, or if you want to offer some kind criticism, please do so. Do it on my iTunes or Stitcher feeds. I read those reviews and comments and feedback. I'm trying to constantly improve this product to suit the desires of my audience. So without further delay, let's get into the interview with Mr. Chad Kalick. All right, Chad, thanks for taking the time to be on the show. I'm excited to talk to you because my journey actually had roots in ghost hunting as well. I've been aware of the existence of ghosts and the paranormal since 1999. That was when I went on my first ghost hunt. This was kind of before a lot of these TV shows made it, you know, mainstream. And it really grabbed me because a buddy of mine got me into it, and he was sharing EVPs with me, and then we did our own, and I got my girlfriend's deceased grandfather's name talking to us on one of them, and then they started manipulating the intercoms in this house we were at, and that's when I realized that this stuff was real. And I know you've got a lot of great examples and stories that you can share with the listeners about the paranormal. So, sure. You know, we're also going to talk a little bit about your current project and your Sir No Face documentary. But first, I want to kind of go into a little bit of your background for the audience, for those of listeners that aren't familiar with your work, and it really starts out with your upbringing from, you know, from what I've read and watched of your previous documentaries. Would you mind sharing a little bit about the background of how you got into this?
Yeah, well, first off, to address what you said about having your own experiences, that's, you know, one of the most interesting things about the paranormal and what I found is that I'm always fascinated by, you know, people who are staunchly skeptical, only because I believe skepticism is completely healthy and necessary to be a good investigator. But when I meet, you know, staunch skeptics that no matter, you know, what you say or present, they deny, you know, the existence of these things. What's interesting is the one thing that a lot of skeptics have in common is they've never been on a ghost hunt. They've never been anywhere and they've never spent the night in Waverly Hills. They've never been to Chillingham Castle. They've never been to the locations where these things are, you know, heavily reported. And I always find that funny because it'd be like me telling, you know, a stand-up comic his job is easy and I've never attempted it. You know what I mean? It's like, how would I know? I've never tried it. I have no idea. And that's kind of, you know, this goes back to the history and kind of, you know, my journey in this field. What's really interesting, what I think is the most interesting thing, I guess, about my past is the contrast of the family I grew up in versus the man I am today and the beliefs that I have today. Because as a child, I was completely atheist. My family was not, you know, overtly religious in any capacity. We had never spoken about ghosts as a child. I literally never had a single conversation with my parents about such a thing because it just wasn't a part of our family. I mean, my dad was a career Air Force man, very scientific, very straightforward. You know, I remember, my father telling me this joke when I was a child, and it just popped in my head the other day, and I just started laughing. You know, at one point we were talking about UFOs because my dad was he was an engineer, worked on planes and stuff in the military and in the Air Force. And I was born in Eglin Air Force Base in the Gulf Breeze, which is known for UFO sightings. And we were having a conversation kind of about, you know, the spiritual world versus the reality. And, you know, if there is a God, there's certain things that people pray to it when sometimes they don't look at the obvious things. Like, you know, he said if your backyard was on fire, you know, would you pray to God to put it out or would you turn on a hose? You know, I mean, there's like, you know, really, you know, obvious things you do. So, you know, growing up, I'm just giving that example as just, it just wasn't part of my life. And then my father was injured. He was in an explosion that he was burnt over 3/4 of his body, third degree. He was not supposed to live. They took us to say goodbye to him twice on two consecutive nights. The doctors allowed us to say our final goodbyes, and he lived through both those nights. And he's alive today and very healthy, despite having obviously a lot of scar tissue. But because of the scar tissue, we couldn't live in Texas anymore because scar tissue doesn't sweat, so you can't exist in an environment that's very hot. Without being a very high risk for heat stroke. So with that being the case, their family was in and around the Omaha, Nebraska area. So we moved back there, which that whole area has about 9 months of winter. And my parents started looking for, you know, a place to live, essentially, that was away from the big city. And they found this house for sale in a small town of 336 people called Persia, Iowa. And they bought a house that was an incredible deal, beautiful little country house. But the two previous families before had moved because they thought it was haunted. Us not, you know, giving much credence to that, not believing in it, you know, we thought it was silly. So, you know, my parents bought the home. We were dramatically mistaken in our views and what was possible. And as a child, I just started, I mean, I just have a very open family. We could speak our mind as children. I never got in trouble for, you know, saying curse words or anything. Like, I'm just a very open family. Sure. And, you know, we could speak our minds at all times. And I started noticing that my parents would get up and they would leave and they would go have these quiet whisper conversations in the other room, and I would see them whispering around, and, you know, it kind of got to the point where I was just like, you know, what is going on? Like, why are all these bizarre conversations happening that I can't hear? Like, what is going on? And, you know, what I was told is there are really spooky things going on in the house. You know, my father had described seeing some black figure hovering above the bed, seeing these two black figures outside his window, describing them with green eyes, giggling at him. My mother said objects were being thrown around the house. I had not witnessed this for myself. Mm-hmm. My brother had not at that time. Eventually, he had his own experiences, and eventually I had a massive experience that was, I guess I'll try to make this a long story short. Essentially, my parents were grocery shopping, and my brother was at a friend's house, so I walked around the house provoking, just saying, you know, whatever's here, you know, I don't believe in you, I don't believe in any of this, you know, you have full permission to do whatever you want to do, you know, prove yourself, that type of thing, tough guy stuff, but, you know, and not trying to be a tough guy, just trying to make it happen so I know if they're my, because I couldn't figure out how is my whole family going crazy simultaneously.
Sure.
You know what I mean? How are they all having these experiences and I'm not? And that night I went to sleep and I was awoken by what sounded and appeared to be a fist, like if someone took a fist and hit the wall as hard as you could. I mean, it shook everything in my room. So I woke up and was like, oh my God, you know, what was this? I ran into my brother's room, which was adjacent, in which he told me, you know, I didn't hear anything. I was like, that is impossible. How could you have not heard that? It was like a bomb went off in my room. And he's like, I didn't hear anything, you know? So I'm like, Jesus, so I'm sleeping with you, you know, get over it, you know? So I hop in his bed to go to sleep. And right as we're both falling asleep, we hear the bangs start in his room. But now not only do we hear them, but they're alternating from wall to wall, just to make sure we know it's something that is in fact doing it. My brother is through the door before I am. He's running down the stairway. And I remember going down the stairs, and I always reference this because it was just such a crazy thing. It almost seemed like time slowed down, like the stairs were only one landing of stairs. And as we were going down the stairs, the banging was happening, alternating on each side of the wall. And it was one landing of stairs, but it just seemed like it took an eternity to get off those stairs. And we hit the bottom of the stairs, and we turned the corner to run through the hallway to go to my parents' room. And I could hear my dad reading scripture, like biblical scripture, really loud. And I hear another weird voice. And I run through the room, and my mother's laying on the bed. She's wincing in pain. Her hair is being pulled. It looks like somebody's pulling a hair, but yet you just can't see who the person is, but you can see her hair being tugged. I'm freaked out by this. I go to the head of the bed trying to process this. She sits up, stops wincing, stops, you know, moaning in pain, just sits up like a board. Looks me directly in the eyes and lunges at my throat and says, I'm going to get you, boy.
Wow.
And, you know, none of us can ever forget that line, I'm going to get you, boy, which is really bizarre because, you know, I was very much a mama's boy. Definitely, you know, the baby of the family. Mama definitely babied me. And, you know, she leans forward like that, and I cocked back to punch her out of just a natural reaction, and I was not able to. My brother grabbed me and dragged me into the adjacent living room, in which right after that, my mom kind of, like, shook out of it. It was almost like she woke up and had no idea what just happened. So my dad and her come into the room to make sure I'm okay, and the beating starts again on the walls, in which we all huddled around, and my dad was just praying out loud and yelling for it to stop. And as quickly as it started, it just stopped. Hmm. We sat in that room for another 3 hours. I went to school the following morning. You know, I've said this before. I just did another interview where I talked about this. It was a bowl of cereal that morning I will never forget because I didn't take a bite of it. It was a bowl of Cocoa Puffs, and I sat staring at it, trying to process the new world that I live in now, the new universe that I just experienced when, you know, now nothing made sense. And I remember my buddy going, you know, dude, like, are you here? What is going on with you? Like, are you going to eat? You know, like, why are you? And I remember thinking to myself, what can I tell him? Mm. What can I tell him right now?
That's heavy.
Without being insane. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing I can say. So it was a real mind fuck to have, like, that type of thing happen. And now you can't talk about it.
Yeah.
You know? So that is what began me down this trail. So when people ask the question, you know, why would a grown man run around in the dark or go to... sorry, there's a siren driving by.
No worries.
One second. So that answers the question as to, like I said, why would a grown man, you know, walk around in the dark and travel the world and go to these haunted locations and do this? And it's just... it's been this never-ending search to do two things. You know, one was to just understand what it is that we're dealing with, and the other was to, my goal, before Craig Powell accomplished this, my goal was to capture that piece of footage that did, in fact, you know, prove the existence of ghosts, which, you know, I was not able to do that. I got a lot of great examples of evidence, but I was never able to actually capture that piece.
Until... the Sir No Face documentary?
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't capture it. Craig did. You know, that whole situation was really bizarre how it all happened because I was on tour with a film of mine called A Blood Red Sky, which is which I'm super excited about. That's going to be coming out here in the next couple months. It was a film that we shot in Chillingham Castle that was about the power of the mind. Basically, we did an experiment to determine, you know, if the mind has the real ability, if psychokinetic ability is real, can the mind move things? Then can the mind create outcomes? Does it control your fate and destiny? Is the secret real? That type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was promoting that film through Australia. And this gentleman, Craig Powell, bought a VIP ticket, and his whole team did. And they came out as, you know, supporters of my film. And I befriended Craig. And he didn't talk to him for probably another 6 or 7 months. And a lot of our fans in Australia were saying, hey, you know, we love that you came over here, but you never did any ghost hunt. We really wanted you to do a ghost hunt. So I contacted Craig and said, you know, hey, you're a team over there. Could you help us find a location to do a ghost hunt? And which he called back and said, yeah, I got this place, Cockatoo Island, and, you know, you could host it there. It's pretty mind-blowing. There's this location that used to be on, it used to be a naval shipyard. It used to be a penal colony, a prison. And he was like, you know, yeah, I can get you on the island. We can do an event there, and you can show your movies and that type of thing. And I'm like, oh, cool, you know, so... so we did it, and I'm over there, and we're giving an evidence presentation to our attendees. Had a sold out event. It was really fun, and I offer him the opportunity to have his team display some of the evidence they've captured over the years. And it was really just a courtesy thing, like, you guys hooked us up with this place, so let me, you know what I mean, like,
sure.
Almost like an opening act type of thing. You know what I mean?
Right,
like, you guys
right.
could show us what you did. And Craig proceeds to show the most mind-blowing series of clips that I've ever seen. And I'm just sitting here going, what am I watching right now? And one of the first clips he showed was there was this ghost that they had a familiar rapport with to the degree that they could say, you know, and this was Sir, and they would say, can we see your light? And on call, this thing could light up a room like a lightning bolt went off.
Yeah,
like,
I saw that in the trailer.
Yeah, there was no shadows cast, no anything. It was like the light emanated from everywhere.
So this wasn't a flashlight.
The bizarre thing was... what's that?
So I know when I was ghost hunting, we would have a flashlight, and we would ask the spirits to turn it on. This wasn't a flashlight. This was a supernatural
light? No.
Wow.
This was a light that from would emanate with no known origin. They didn't know, I mean, everywhere. It came from everywhere. Yeah, there was no source.
Yeah, on the trailer,
and
it's pretty incredible.
What's even crazier about it, when you get in the film, is the building had no electricity running to it.
Wow.
So it's not even like it could have came from the building. I mean, it just had that. And this thing would do it on call in front of a dozen people. You could hear how many people and see how many people in the clip are in the room.
That's unreal.
And nobody can find where the source is coming from. They actually went out, and brought in complete skeptics they knew, from the island, off the street. They brought government officials in and had them witness it. I mean, it was crazy. So this is the first clip that he shows me. So then we started talking more, and I find out that this is all, he has all this footage, but this is all a part of a paranormal investigation that has been officially sanctioned by the Australian government, who got a hold of him. And the reason they got a hold of him is because they turned this former military base into a public park. They put like 200 tents out there. They like made this the nicest place in the world for the public to come and spend time. It's located beautifully in Sydney Harbor, right between Sydney and the Opera House. And if you went out there today, you would not find a soul on that island. I was out there 4 times and nobody was out there. Huh. And the reason is because of these haunted things that were happening. And, and they had employees quitting. Government employees were quitting. People were coming on the island, wanted nothing to do with it. It was crazy.
Wow.
And they got a hold of him thinking that he would basically debunk it, that he would put it to rest and he would figure it out. And they gave him the keys to, every building there. He had complete access to the place and the full support of the government. And as you'll see in the documentary, this is all confirmed by their own emails, their own report they had. The government wouldn't speak to me about this case, but I do have their communication when they were trying to pressure Craig to get me to remove the names of people on the emails, which I would not do. So this story just became so bizarre to me. I was like, what is going on here?
Who do they think Sir No Face is, and where did that name come from?
Well, I could say where the name comes from. I don't want to give away who they think it is, because that's a real big, cool part of the film. But the Sir No Face, the name actually came from the fact that this ghost did identify as Sir. That was what he liked to be called. And the film explains how that came about how they came upon this. Wow. The No Face thing actually came because it was a shorthand between Craig and I. Once I seen the footage and started reviewing it and we would be discussing it, the first time Craig mentioned it to me, he said, it's crazy. It has facial features, but it has no face. And so he would, when I started talking about, because there's a multitude of clips that he has, so I started calling that clip, specifically the No Face clip, and it was called, he went by Sir, so the kind of shorthand, slang became Sir No Face, is what we referred to him as. So I'm in the room, and he plays, the light footage and a series of other clips that are also featured in the movie. And he finally gets to the Sir No Face footage. And what I saw knocked me over. And then you got to remember, I've been doing this for 25 years, man.
Yeah.
I've seen everything there is to see. I've captured everything there is to capture. Like, I know when something is
some extraordinary,
different and unique. Right. This was extraordinary. This was not something you had to squint at. This was not something that was difficult to see. This was not something out of focus. This was clearly what it was. This full body apparition looks directly into the lens of a stationary locked off camera that's in perfect focus. And I was floored to the degree that I felt like it's got to be too good to be true. There has to be, it was so weird because in my mind, I believed it had to be hoaxed or faked. But in my heart, knowing him, I was just like, God, he just doesn't seem like the guy that could do it or would do it, you know? So basically, I went to him and I said, look, Craig, I want to tell the story, but I'm not going to just make a movie saying, you know, you caught this footage. Aren't you a hero? I said, Craig, I got to be honest. You know, I'm having a hard time believing that, you know, this is real because it's so freaking authentic. And I said, so if you want to make this documentary, then I'm going to go to the, you know, end of the earth to try to prove you hoaxed this and try to figure out how you could, how it could be done. I mean, I'm going to dig into your life. I'm going to talk to your friends. I'm going to talk to your friends' friends. I'm going to, you know, give this to my CGI friend who is one of the top CGI animators in the world. Like, he made Transformers. She's all the CGI for Avengers, Benjamin Button. I'm like, I'm taking the footage to him. I'm like, you know, I'm going to do everything I can to prove that you hoaxed this. And I told him, and I said, and Craig, if I find out that you hoaxed this, I'm not making a movie about this incredible footage that proves ghosts exist. I'm making a movie about the asshole that hoaxed this and tried to pass it off for the real deal, you know?
Right.
So I said, you know, so if you say yes to this, just know that if I find out that conclusion, I'm going all the way with it, dude. I'm sinking you, you know, because my reputation is on the line, you know, and
yeah.
If you're going to look me in the eye as a man, knowing that this is how I put food on the table, and you're going to tell me this is real and fuck with me, then, you know, be prepared for what I'm going to do, you know, if I find out that you did. He looked me straight in the eye and just said, Chad, I have nothing to hide. Knock yourself out. Let's do it.
Wow. That's...
Which blew me away. And so the film really gets into this, and you will see how genuine this effort is of me trying to blow holes in this thing and looking at it every possible way known, like digging up every possibility, and just, you know, starting down the list and like, you know, could have been this, could have been this, could have been that, you know. And by the end of the film, you just get led into a corner where there's only one possibility. There's only one, and it is what it is. Craig Powell filmed the world's first clearly identifiable full body apparition proving that ghosts exist.
Wow, that's chilling the way you describe it, how it looks into the camera.
It's crazy.
The way
it moves like human-ish. It's like it moves so independent of gravity and so fluid, and you just have to see it. It's not like it's floating, it's different. It's almost like it's in water when it's not. It's just so weird. It has such a unique movement to it that is bone chilling. When you see it, you know, man, that thing looks human, but it's not human. You know what I mean? It's human-ish. You know?
And that's what I wanted to talk to you about, because, you know, I consider you an expert, obviously. You've had all these years of researching it. I was probably practicing ghost hunting for about a year, and then I had all kinds of creepy things happening to me, and that's when I rolled out and said, okay, this is real. I'm not messing with it. My question to you, because in my research, it seems that this idea of the existence of aliens, like, I believe in it. I don't know if I believe what most people believe in them as. I feel like they might be kind of fallen spirits or demonic entities. And you even mentioned in your story about how when you were kind of coming down those stairs, it felt like time was kind of extended, sort of like dilation in quantum physics. And that's the same experience people with alien abductions go through. So do you think that it's possible that some of these spirits are just demons trying to, I don't know if they're trying to like fuck with you or trying to like harness energy from people. What's your like, I mean, you alluded to the idea that you were atheist.
As far as what are they? You know, the reason I don't, look, I'm not an atheist. I'm not
anymore.
And I'm not agnostic. I think it would be insulting if I call. I think it would be insulting to Christians if I called myself a Christian.
I'm right there with you, brother. I know what you mean.
Yeah, there's just things I struggle. Yeah. There's a lot about Christianity that I love, and I find myself praying often at times to what would be a Christian God. But there are things about the Bible and things like that that I just struggle with.
Right.
So I always say, and I know it's a common thing to say, I say that I'm not religious, but I'm definitely spiritual. And what I mean by that is I just think mankind is, you know, the one ability that mankind has that they demonstrated over and over again is the ability to fuck anything up good that they put their hands in. And I think, you know, spirituality has been manipulated into religion. And so when it comes to using terms like demonic and stuff, I've had so much experience with the paranormal and so very little of it was negative that to me it was just kind of like people in the world. Most of the people I've met in my life are positive. And there's a small percentage of people that I met that are really negative and are really nasty to be around and just, you know, bad people. So as far as what they are, you know, it's kind of weird because the term, and the reason I say Craig footage proves that ghosts exist, because the ghost is an all-encompassing term that people use without any of us having a definition we all agree upon. For example, like if I hear a voice coming from the other room when it shouldn't be there, we go, oh my God, is that a ghost? You know, if I hear footsteps somewhere, is that a ghost? You know, if something touches me that isn't there, is that a ghost? You know, like we use this term to, right? It's just so encompassing. So as far as what they are, I have different thoughts at different times. I do believe in human energy. I do believe that, you know, we have a fundamental, I mean, we're electric beings. But, you know, if we don't look at it scientifically, our bodies do emanate electricity. We do have energy. And there's a fundamental principle of energy, meaning, you know, science cannot be created, or energy cannot be created or destroyed. It can only be transferred. I've seen many cases that argue, make really, really sound arguments for reincarnation. But the thing that I have a tendency most of the time to believe is that when we're talking about ghosts, I think we're talking about alternate dimensions, like parallel universes and time frames, where for some reason there's a blip in the matrix, you know, or there's places on Earth where things come together in such a perfect fashion, where these incredible things are now possible in these locations.
Yeah, because there's a idea of like energy vortexes in certain areas that to me is proven through a lot of these ghost hunting experiments where.
Something's going on at Cockatoo. The amount of things they've experienced there, and even the things I experienced in my short time there, something very, very bizarre is going on down there. But yeah, it's, you know, that's the thing, you know, because that's such a vast, you know, universe of possibilities as far as what are they and where they come from and what are their goals. Like, I've never, you know, made that really about my research. My research was always, let's get to a place where we can universally agree that it's real, and then we can start trying to figure out what it is.
Yeah, I'm right there with you with that struggle.
Yeah, right.
So a lot of people don't want to hear this kind of stuff. They would rather just stay shut off from this stuff.
Because it doesn't exist, right.
Yeah.
Right, totally.
And you know what? Go ahead, sorry.
No, what I was saying, for years, that's why I just wanted to capture that piece. I just wanted to. And I had kind of given up on it and started to feel like I'm chasing the unachievable dream. And the reason I felt that way, look, you know, part of me felt like the way technology was advancing, at some point, someone's going to capture it. But I guess I just didn't know if it would happen in my lifetime, just because. I mean, it's the impossible. You don't know when or where anything is going to happen. You don't know what direction, what the activity. I mean, like, it would just be like me sending you out into, like, L.A. and be like, at somewhere today, somewhere in Los Angeles, someone's going to pull out, you know, a purple hat and put it on. Go find it and film it.
Right.
You know what I mean? You don't know when, where, not like, you know. So it just seemed so impossible that I had really kind of written the whole process off. And I was like really at the tail end of, of investigating and kind of, you know, I said to myself, I found the answers that I'm going to find for me. Mm-hmm. And the ones that remain open are just going to have to remain open. So when I saw this, and especially by the end of the film, there was this excitement that came over me because I knew it was real. I knew it proved it. I really knew that. But there was also kind of this sad kind of somberness because I'm like, what am I going to ghost hunt for now? You know what I mean? Like, it really did kind of send me into full-blown retirement in regard to ghost hunting, just because I've always known it's real. It was never about that. It was about, you know, giving people a chance to see something that proves it. And now that I know that's been captured, you know, it has had an effect on me. It really has. But I am thankful that for whatever reason, whoever the, you know, creator is, and if, you know, if there isn't one, whatever path that I chose, I'm just very grateful that it allowed me to be in a place to be the storyteller of such an amazing legend.
You know? Wow. Yeah. So another idea you talked about is in your previous American Ghost Hunter documentary, you talked about, I believe you were talking to Ryan, and there was discussion about the dangers involved in this. And, you know, obviously you put yourself in harm's way because you're, you know, doing some sort of provocation. You're basically asking these unknown spirits to come and contact you. Have you ever been concerned with being possessed by them?
I've not been concerned with being possessed because, well, here's the thing. And to clear this up, I absolutely believe evil exists in the world. We don't got to look that far to find that, right?
True.
And we've seen it exist in like this mob mentality where like a few people start doing something negative, then it kind of spreads. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon, look, we can look back historically, right? Look, Nazi Germany, you know what I mean? We go to the Congo and rape camps and all this stuff where it's like water almost, you know, it finds its way in every crack and crevice that it can until pretty soon this whole area is flooded with it. You know what I mean? And so I definitely believe evil exists. But I also believe that it has to find a way in. There has to be a part of you that gives it permission, that allows it to kind of feel to fill up that what would be a vacant spiritualness. You know, it has to replace it somehow. You have to let it in. You have to get rid of free will. You have to have free will be overtaken by something. I really believe that. And I was never in a position where I felt like I would allow something to hurt me in that fashion. I never felt like I was giving up free will. I never felt like I wasn't in control. But, you know, what is scary, you know, is that we're all guessing. We don't know the ramifications of anything we do. I mean, at the end of the day, we're guessing about a world that we still don't even have, you know, an inkling of understanding. So there is always the fear of the unknown, or I feel like, you know, what if I'm about to do something that I think is totally cool, and I have no idea that it could, you know, set off a chain reaction that I can't come back to. You know, like, that kind of stuff crosses my mind. But, you know, I was never scared during American Ghost Hunter of any kind of thing possessing me. I knew my mother had been through something, and I knew whatever it was, it made her very weak. And, you know, she allowed something to, you know, essentially connect to her.
Yeah.
And it was very, very hard to get it to unconnect because she was a willing participant. So those things, you know, yes, I'm always concerned with what it can do, but I've never been afraid, and I've never had anything fully, you know, in any capacity, like, take me over or anything like that. Like, I've never had that happen.
Right. Okay. And I love that answer. That actually kind of supports a lot of the ideas I've been exploring. You know, something that seems to really connect me, and I've said it many times before, Charles Manson, in his book, he wrote about how his quote-unquote family, when they were traveling through California, before they did the murders and all that, they were at the a place called the Spiral Staircase, which was full of witches and all this dark energy. And he claims that at that point, they confronted evil, and it perhaps took possession of the whole family. So I like that idea that how you were saying
it's
possible, but you kind of have to allow it to happen. And I think maybe they were allowing it to happen because they were open to the idea of, you know, evil being okay on some levels. So
yeah, well, look, evil exists in the world. It's all around us every day.
Yeah.
Like, it's waiting for us to allow it to infiltrate. For example, when the term demonic, the reason I'm not down with that is because that's so specifically defined and related to a Catholic theology that if you're Catholic, it makes sense. If you're not, that doesn't mean anything. So let's use a term that means something to everybody. And I think just evil in general means something to everybody. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about how can it consume you. Well, what a Catholic may view as a demonic possession, I would view as simply the loss of free will and something else taking control, right? Like, mm-hmm. they're kind of talking about the same thing here. Well, if you look in situations, people that are often, quote, possessed, if you look historically speaking, you know, you never hear stories about, like, oh, this guy is doing really well, has his shit together, you know, is happy, has, you know, is productive, he's, you know, healthy, and bam, he's possessed. That never happens. You always hear about it occurring to the weak and the wounded, which I understand, because what's more evil than attacking someone when they're weak or when they're wounded? Mm-hmm. But the reason I think they're able to attack at that point, it's because whether you're spiritual or not, the one thing in the world that every human being places a value on to the degree that they will lay down their life for it is free will, freedom. Mm-hmm. The ability to make your own choices and live like a free human being, free, you know, the freedom to choose is, and just free choice in general is so important. The most important thing that we have. Now, what are the things that you can do in this world to lose that freedom of choice? Well, one of the most obvious ones to me that I see all the time is, you know, drug addiction. And as somebody who, you know, has seen that up close and lost many friends to it, I mean, you got to stop and look. What happens when someone's addicted to a heavy substance? What happens is their freedom of choice has been given away. And now something else is in control, and now they wake up, and the only thing they want is more of this substance that ultimately kills them. And that's completely against their choice, right? They would never want that. No one would say, man, I really want to be an addict. I really want to make bad decisions. But yet something consumes them, and they can't stop doing it. And you got to go back to why did it start? Well, why, you know, it started because someone was weakened, someone was hurt, someone was downtrodden, someone had been wronged, someone had lost hope in existence, and then these things can start happening. So to me, like, that's evil. That's the demonic. You know, anything that could hurt you in a way where you lose the freedom of choice. And as long as you have that freedom to choose, then I think you're ultimately protected. And so when I would go into these cases, you know, I basically, what I would do is close my eyes before I go in, and I would just think about what I'm fixing to do, and I would remind myself over and over again, listen, you're in control. You have the choice. If you don't like what's going on here, you can leave. You know, you cannot do this, Chad. You cannot do this. It was just always a firm reminder that I'm in control. And that always worked for me, even in the most, you know, insane of cases that I've been on. So that was always my approach to it.
I love that. I've never heard that kind of outlook on this before. I've spent a lot of time watching, researching, and conducting some of these ghost hunt operations. I've been in a couple of the ghost hunter societies. That's a unique perspective, and, you know, I can get behind that. I agree with you that the free will comes into play, and you know, evil is what we're to be concerned with, and making sure people aren't making themselves susceptible to it. But look, it's been a fascinating journey that you've been on for, you know, 20 plus years. I think this latest project of yours, everyone needs to see it, whether they're a skeptic or not. I know I'm definitely going to see it. Where can people find out more on when and where you'll be going on this tour that shows this documentary?
Yeah, the tour, everybody can visit surnoface.com, www.surnoface.com. The tour starts August 2nd in Austin, Texas, and it ends September 10th. It's 30 U.S. cities, so we're going into Texas, across the Deep South, up the East Coast into New England, back to the Midwest, and down through the high desert back into California. So the upper Northwest, we're not visiting on this tour, but we have plans for the future. But pretty much anywhere else in the country, we're going to be coming to your town, or we're going to be within driving distance.
Excellent.
And I would urge anybody who is, skeptical of ghosts, or if you're a believer and you also want confirmation from one of your own experiences, come out and see this movie. It's going to blow your mind. It really does put the debate to rest. And people could finally just say, yes, this is real. Beyond that, it's one truly entertaining movie because the story of Craig Powell is just so fascinating. And in addition to the film, there's like three different ticket packages, and they all include more and more items. There's, I'm going to be giving a paranormal evidence presentation, showing the best stuff I've captured over the last 25 years. Our VIP tickets are unlike anything else offered, where you really get to step behind the scenes and spend the whole evening with me. There's a two-hour meet and greet, a private dinner, the best seats in the house, a post-event hangout, Q&A session, autographed merchandise, like the best Q&A or the best VIP ticket offered. Only 20 of those are offered per tour date. All the way around, it's a very special movie, and I'm very honored to tell Craig's story and to continue to build the legend of Surnoface and this incredibly true, 100% true story of Cockatoo Island and Surnoface. And to answer a question that somebody asked on Facebook, they said, am I going to get to the end of this and this is like some Blair Witch thing where you find out it's all staged? I can assure everybody that's not the case. It's a very real documentary. I would kill me if I went to an event and something like that happened. No, this is a 100% real documentary. Nothing has been staged, faked, or hoaxed. You will be floored by what you see. I promise you this.
Wow, it doesn't get any better than that. I'll post links on IlluminatiWatcher.com as well, in case anyone's listening to this and they didn't catch all that. And go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, find my interview with Chad Kalig. I'll put the links on there of what he's talking about. Like he said, there's going to be many tickets. You can see this documentary, do meet and greets with Chad and the crew, all kinds of other stuff and bonuses. But Chad, I honestly really truly want to thank you for taking the time to share your experience with us, and best of luck on your journey, and stay safe, brother.
Very cool. Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to listening to the show. What city are you in?
I'm in Utah, Salt Lake City.
You're in Utah. Oh, gosh, dang it. I don't think we're coming that close to you.
You're coming to Denver, though.
Unless you want to come to California.
Denver or California.
We'll do it. Denver, yeah. That'll work. Yeah, swing over to Denver, man.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to do that, let me know, and I'll put you on the list for sure. We'd love to have you.
Heck yeah.
And thank you for having me on the show. Thank you for giving me a voice and for giving this film the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, the pleasure's all mine. Thanks again, Chad.
All right, thanks so much, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Wow, that was a great interview, great show, great guest. Thanks again to Chad Kalig for coming on. Like he said, there will be websites for Sir No Face that you can check it out and find out where they're playing in the cities near you. It's surnoface.com. And if you can't find it for whatever reason, you can go to my website, IlluminatiWatcher.com, find the post for this exact interview. I will have all the links there. I'll also have the links where you can catch up with Chad, follow him on Twitter, Facebook, and so on. I also have the links for the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture podcast, iTunes, and Stitcher feeds, which is where I need you to put your feedback, review, and comment on if you like this show, what you do like about it, what you'd like to see, maybe certain guests, and I'll see what I can do. I want to thank you for listening. Again, this is Isaac Weishaupt from IlluminatiWatcher.com.
What does it mean to be a leader in cancer care? At Davis Hospital Cancer Center, we know. It means a team of experts providing exceptional care using advanced technology and treatment plans designed specifically for each of our patients. And our nurse patient navigators are here to make your experience convenient and comfortable. To find out how our expert team could help you, contact us at davishospital.org. The Cancer Center at Davis Hospital and Medical Center, a Steward family hospital in partnership with physician owners.
The new year comes with new ways for pros to save at Lowe's. Like when you're ready to tackle your taxes, we'll help you save up to $100 off federal tax preparation when you file through TurboTax. All you have to do is sign up to become a Lowe's Pro Loyalty member by January 25th, and the savings is yours. This exclusive offer is for new Lowe's Pro Loyalty members only, so sign up at lowesforpros.com/proloyalty. Lowe's, the new home for pros. Discount valid on select TurboTax services through October 15th. More terms apply. U.S. only.